helping children obtain the knowledge and skills they need to succeed, today on UK Perspectives. A new National Center for Innovation in Education has been created at UK to help shape the national conversation on education reform, standards, outcomes, and accountability. Our guest is the director of the new center, Gene Wilhoit. Welcome to the program, Gene.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
What are some of the goals of this National Center for Innovation in Education?
Well, the primary goal is to begin to look at changing education at a larger scale than what we've done in the past. We have lots of small, innovative projects that have been quite successful, but the system seems to move forward. And today, we still, despite many years of attempts to reform public education, we still have too many students underserved. And at this time in our history, those students who are being underserved are increasing in numbers in our schools, and they're bringing more and more problems to the schools that need to be addressed. So the idea here is to concentrate our work in states. We have 10 states now that have signed on to work with the Innovation Center, Kentucky being only one of those, to look at larger scale change. So it's different than most innovation networks in that it ties together the state, the district, and the schools. And so in each of those 10 states, we have districts and we have schools who are working to bring about change. They're the laboratories. The states are protecting them, supporting them. At the same time, the states are reflecting on what changes are necessary to bring about larger scale change in the system.
Is the intention eventually to bring in all 50 states?
It is. It is. And we have several other states who are interested at this point. We're just looking at capacity and beginning the effort. We had a meeting with the 10 states last week, and there were 4 to 5 other states who said that as soon as possible, they'd like to join. So we'll bring them on as we have the capacity to do so.
Now, there's been tremendous discussion over the years about how to improve the quality of teaching, particularly in areas of reading, writing, and arithmetic. And I wonder, how is your effort different from what's been done in the past? And how are these ideas going to be implemented?
Well, we obviously will learn from the successful work that's been underway. But the demands for our students, their future, is going to be very different. And we can already see the changes underway. But it's going to be more dramatic for these students. They're not only going to need to learn to read, write, and compute. We're going to rely on them to be innovators. We're going to have to rely on them to be critical thinkers and problem solvers. We're going to have to rely on them to be good communicators and collaborative workers. Those are the conditions, and we've talked very directly to higher education and to the business world about what they want to see in a high-quality graduate from our public school system. And we've aligned our expectations with the success factors that are coming out of higher education and out of business and industry. And it's not enough anymore to know reading, writing, arithmetic. That's a basic, and it is absolutely critical that you know those things. But it is what you do with the knowledge that's more important right now. And so we're beginning to gear this work around what would be the outcome expectations that we should expect in the future, realigning our systems around those.
When Dr. Todd was president at UK, he used to talk about how students are connected by their iPhones and their iPads and their laptops outside of the classroom. Then they come to class. He was thinking particularly at UK. They come to class and they turn all that off, and then they listen to someone standing up in front of the room and talking to them. And then they go back to being connected again. And he said, we've got to find a way to bring those two worlds together. So I take it that's part of your
absolutely
effort.
We have 6 critical attributes around this transition that we're talking about in public education that we want to see in the future. One of them is putting technology at the center of the learning process. It doesn't replace the human element in all of this. In fact, it brings to bear a much stronger role in terms of coaching and guiding students. But if you think about this, the environment we created in a school, that is the place for learning, is now a confining environment for these youngsters. And so the real knowledge base is out there in the world. The idea of a teacher is going to have to be expanded because there are people with a knowledge base, and we have now the technology to deliver that. And students, as we all know, are perfectly adept at bringing technology to the learning process. The problem is that we adults are going to have to move more aggressively than we had in the past. But yes, technology is one of the 6 critical elements in this process.
Yeah, my 2-year-old granddaughter can already manipulate a cell phone.
Yeah, absolutely. And who do you go to fix the TV when it's not connected to the right location in the house? And it is amazing how intuitive all of this is to a youngster. To us, I will learn technology if it kills me, and most likely will. But for these youngsters, It is something that they grow up with, they're attracted to, and it is seen as a positive, rewarding experience for them to interact with the technology. And one of the things we're doing in this network is bringing new technologies to the learning process. So right now, if you say to teachers, use technology in the classroom, that's a pretty challenging task, because to go out there and find technology, you have to weed through so many different elements, and it's time-consuming, and it's more trouble than it's worth. One of the things we're doing in this process is aggregating those resources around the learning goals that we've established, so that a fifth grade teacher in mathematics can go to the center and find appropriate resources that other teachers are using, connect to other teachers who are using the same tools, and we can begin to build a stronger technology base for learning.
We talked about the three R's earlier, and these days it's much more sophisticated. We talk about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math as being essential skills for children and young adults. But Dr. Capilouto here at UK has also advocated for adding an A to that mix, STEAM, and calling it STEAM for the arts being a part of this element. So what role, or is there a role for arts education in your center and in the future of education?
Well, what we're finding is that in this process of emphasizing, overemphasizing in many cases, mathematics and English language arts learning, many of the schools have pulled the arts out of the education process, which is just absolutely the wrong thing to do. First of all, it's a way for students to learn. It's a methodology. We also know that students who are engaged in arts are better in the other content areas. And we also know that in business and industry, one of the conversations we've gotten out of our interactions with business is that they find arts majors to be a prime candidates for successful jobs. Even places like General Motors are now hiring arts graduates to work in engineer with their engineers. So it brings an aspect of learning. It brings a degree of knowledge that you don't get in other content areas. It's a way of motivating students who might not be motivated by traditional means. So it's an integral, important part. And so what you'll see, I think, in the next few years is a much stronger emphasis on a broad-based education. Students need a learning in the arts. They need it in mathematics and in science. They need to be able to blend those things together. And one of the aspects of our design is that we're beginning to think about what would be the new experience at the secondary level. And basically, the thought is that you need to begin to bring together the learning that comes from the disparate subjects that you master as you move through the career. And then at that high school level, begin to think about how those things come together. Of course, you have an area of high interest. You have an area where you excel. But it doesn't mean you need to learn those things at the exclusion of other subjects. And the arts are very important to the process.
One of the things I always tell young people is you don't know now what you're going to need to know when you're in a job 10 years from now, 20 years from now. So learn everything.
And basically, that's even more true today than it was a number of years ago. These students are going to change jobs, even careers, many times in their lives. So the better you can prepare yourself in a broad context to have these application knowledge, critical thinking, problem-solving skills, ability to relate to other people is even more important as a basis for education.
We often hear that education levels for students of color and for people living in poverty are much lower than they should be. So what can be done to change that?
It has to change. First of all, the percentage of students who are coming into school, the lowest income folks in this country now are children. So we're having more and more poverty coming to school. And we are having a much more diverse and a richer country than we've had historically. So to not educate those children is a major issue for them personally, but it's also a problem for the society. We will not survive unless we reach these children. And so it means we've got to understand what they're bringing to school. We have to be able to intervene in their lives much more dramatically than we have in the past. And we need to begin to provide richer supports behind them. We can't let them get behind. And one of the problems we've had historically is that many of these youngsters have low-quality early childhood experiences. We have to overcome that. And while they're overcoming, the students with a solid base are moving ahead, and the gap between those high achievers and low achievers becomes even greater because of those deficits. So we need to intervene early and dramatically and do so in a much more sophisticated way than we do right now. We can't rely on a single teacher to know all the problems that the child's bringing to the classroom. So it means wrapping around them very different kinds of support structures than we have in most districts today.
You mentioned intervention, and certainly that's going to be an important part in addressing this next issue, which is the dropout crisis in America. How do we deal with that? I mean, right now in Kentucky, we're debating increasing the dropout age and making that a law in the land. Is that the fix, or how do we address the dropout crisis?
Well, certainly no 16-year-old should be in society without a high school education. And so it is important to hold them in the schools. But simply increasing the age is not the total solution. Most of these youngsters who are 16 years old and dropping out do it for three reasons. One, they're in a social environment where it's very difficult to move forward. Secondly, they're behind academically and just know in a rational sort of decision-making process that they're not going to make it, and so they drop out. And the sad thing is they do that in the 11th and 12th grade, so they've invested all those years and then drop. And the third reason is they're alienated from the school environment. And so we know where we need to go and what we need to do with these problems. And so as we increase the age, then we need to be able to look at remediation programs much more effectively than we do right now, catching these youngsters up and putting them in an environment where they can be successful, offer them more choices about how they go through the learning experience in the high school years. Career and technical education is a wonderful way for many of these students. And right now, you don't have to go to get a traditional four-year degree. Going into community technical college or into a career program is perfectly acceptable as a launch into your life. So the opportunities here are just dramatic for improving the learning environment for these youngsters. And so I would combine both increasing age with those new opportunities for learning.
You've spoken about the need for deeper learning and teaching students to think critically. And you've also mentioned that one of the focuses of your center will be meaningful ways to measure these kinds of efforts. Now, in the U.S., we've relied very heavily in the past on standardized tests for assessment. So how do you propose transforming the measurement of educational success to include things like deeper learning and critical thinking?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. In this country, unlike many of the other countries, we have put an overemphasis on the summative kind of test that is administered by a state, which by definition can't measure all that a student knows and is a fairly narrow look into the life of that child. Yet we're using that to make all judgments about whether that student's successful and whether the school is successful or not. And what we're talking about now is developing a whole array of assessment designs that can be adjudicated at a local level as well as at a state level. We'll probably keep some sort of summative assessment, but that ought to be primarily used to judge whether a school is successful as an environment. But we need other measures for what's successful for students. Now, measuring critical thinking or problem solving is something you cannot do on a multiple choice test. It's something you can't do very well on a more extensive statewide assessment. So those are going to have to be set at the local level, and we're going to have to trust our teachers and give them the skills to be able to measure those accurately and come up with different kinds of things. And that means things like doing an experiment in science class, monitoring the process the student used to make sure it's correct, looking at the results they got, how they write that up and defend it is all something that's very important. And it shows teamwork and activity. But again, it won't be done on a statewide test. So we're going to have other factors that go into making those judgments about student success and about school success.
Everything we've talked about here in terms of improving educational levels for people of color and those in poverty, addressing the dropout issue, even the measurement of success, all of this is going to cost money. So is your center involved in figuring out how we're going to pay for this better education system?
Yeah, one of the threads of work will be, are there new finance structures? And I think it would be a gross error on our part to think that all of this is going to be new money. I think the realities are that education is going to compete with health services, with other kinds of important programs. And so there's probably not going to be an unlimited amount of money going in or an unquestioning resourcing of public education. So we're going to have to think about taking some things away or doing some things differently than we've done right now. And for example, right now we finance education based on the bodies that are in the classroom. The model we've been playing with is maybe we should do that on results. If a student graduates early, we shouldn't take that money away from the school. They use that for the students who need more time, because one of the elements we're talking about in the learning process is we will demonstrate learning through mastery of our expectations. And when you do that, some students will master those earlier, some will take longer. That's perfectly all right. It's more important that they master the content than it is to spend so many years in that seat. And so you can redistribute the finance formula so that it rewards schools who move students through, who reach high academic standards in a timely way, and take away resources if they're not producing the kind of results that we need. So, yes, we're looking at different finance structures.
How are K through 12 teachers going to be involved in the center?
Very directly. I've found that there's a lot of untapped knowledge, interest, and commitment on the part of teachers, and yet we don't have a structure that brings that to the forefront. And so one of the things the center will do is to organize teachers in learning communities, to look to them to help us solve the problems, look at themselves as researchers. And that's one of the nice attributes of this work that we have, that it's centered here at the University of Kentucky, because we could bring together the researchers, the folks who have high expertise in these fields, to interact with teachers to be a part of that learning process. I hope, and Dean O'Hare has been a wonderful supporter of this work and is excited about bringing the resources of the university to bear on the learning process for our teachers in the field, both in terms of pre-service as well as professional growth.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Our guest has been Gene Wilhoit, director of the new National Center for Innovation in Education. Our complete UK Perspectives interview is available at wuky.org. For WUKY, I'm Tom Goodell.